Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and today we have a program that is loaded with diverse information. We're going to begin by taking a look at how regular exercise can slow the decline in those at risk for Alzheimer's. We're talking probably 20 million Americans who are at risk. This is from the University of Wisconsin. We'll follow that with a lot of other good, insightful health and nutrition updates. Then we're going to have an original, in-depth commentary. This commentary is going to deal with something on skepticism and the new scientific inquisition. Yes, we will draw an analysis from the Inquisition back in the 15th century till today. And it'll be posted so you can share it with others. Also, I have a guest in the second part of our program, Sander Hicks. Sander is an award-winning author, a journalist, a social activist, and an independent publisher, now publishing in the New York Megaphone newspaper. And earlier, he was the founder of the independent Left's Soft Skull Press. Well, he has run afoul of the FBI, and he's going to be here to talk about what happens when U.S. intelligence is silencing Americans seeking peace building with Iran and between Israel and Palestine. So he becomes an enemy of the state. Yet warmongers, people who are undermining peace efforts in the Middle East, and those who are actually seeking and employing tools of regime change, are rewarded and made harmless. What a world we live in. We also have a few very interesting audio clips that we're going to play today, including AstroTurf and Manipulation of the Media Messages by Cheryl Atkinson. Also, I told you yesterday, but didn't have a chance because of my guest, Guy McPherson, went a little long yesterday, and necessarily so, I might mention. So today we're going to begin with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, board-certified physician, giving us a Classroom 101 on vaccines. By the end of this classroom, which will be six programs, about 10 minutes each, you will know more about vaccines, the truth about their safety and efficacy, the fact they did not eradicate smallpox, polio, or measles, and the truth. And that is important. Also, we are starting a major effort to inform Congress, every member of Congress, that the vaccine exemption law of 1986 had nothing to do with promoting healthy vaccines. We have uncovered all the truth of all the people involved. They are all tied to money from Big Pharma. The entire political system was involved in this corrupt situation. So we're going to uncover that as well today. Also, a lot of people don't always hear this program live. If you do want to listen live and you're out and about, you're not near a computer or a land-based station, like a radio, you can always dial a number and listen to it. Here's our Listen Live phone number, 605-562-7900, 605-562-7900. But more often than not, people listen at the archives when they have a chance, generally in the evening. The latest study that we did, analyticals, we brought in people to do this. That's not my area's expertise. And they said that the average age of my audience is 37, women, college educated, listening to the program at home. Those who are interested in the health part of our program tend to be older and listening live. Interesting. Those interested in the environment are younger. And those interested in special commentaries tend to be more professional, meaning people with professional backgrounds like to hear the investigative reporting. We just like to know who's listening and for what reason. So if you want to listen over the archives at night, here's a number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Now to health and nutrition. And keep in mind that all of our information is fully referenced in peer-reviewed scientific literature. This comes from the University of Wisconsin, and it's about regular exercise. Moderate exercise is not only good for memory, according to University of Wisconsin, of any age, it also appears to help prevent the development of physical signs of Alzheimer's. These are known as biomarkers in those who are at risk of the disease, and that's according to the American Psychological Association's annual convention. So when you're exercising up through middle age, you really put time on your side. You help yourself stave off dementia, which impacts your memory and cognitive functions. That's important. So that's good. Now, we go to the University of Zurich, as well as the University of Athens. And this was published in the BMC's complementary, that's a British medical journal, and complementary and alternative medicine. They're showing that maslinic, that's M-A-S-L-I-N-I-C acid, and oleonolic acid, that's O-L-E-A-N-O-L-I-C, inhibit a lot of the pathogens in the body because they have strong antimicrobial activity, especially against oral pathogens. If you remember, about a week ago, I talked about how a lot of viruses and bacteria in our mouths, if we do not engage in proper healthy oral hygiene, migrate to the heart and can cause heart disease or into the brain. So in this study, researchers from Austria, Germany, Greece, and Switzerland investigated the antimicrobial potential of five chemical components of the Oleuropea and three compounds from the Pistacea alentisiscus. And these are published. Now, to make it in lay language so you can understand it, you want natural antibacterial agents in your body. When you have an onion, that kills a lot of bacteria in your throat, and your gastrointestinal system, even in your bloodstream. Garlic, onions, shallots, they're good at that. But in this case, they're talking about olives. Did you know that olives, namely the oleuropean and maslinic acids, and these other acids, are good against 10 different oral bacteria, including Candida albicans, which means it's also good for Candida in your intestine. So, the takeaway message in the most simplified form is that when you're eating olives, and this is just about all olives, and there are hundreds of varieties of olives, you're helping yourself kill the bad bacteria, including yeast. And you're also helping kill the gingivitis bacteria in your mouth. One more reason to have olives and olive oil. From University of Western Ontario comes a study about post-traumatic stress disorder. I've worked with a lot of people with post-traumatic stress disorder. I promised a group of veterans that I would set up a center for them because when I met them, they were in the woods. I mean, literally, no electricity, no sanitation. They were living as close to nature as you could live. They were broke. They didn't have money. In fact, a group of 10 of them didn't have the, I think it was $67 to get one guy who just had some heart stents put in, and he was bleeding, and it was infected. And when I said, why didn't, he showed me a crumpled piece of paper in his pocket. So I have the infection. I'm aware of that. And I go to the ocean each day and bathe in the salt water trying to heal it. And I said, it's just the opposite. The salt water increases bacterial infection. Salt water is very toxic. But more importantly, he didn't have the money. And the VA said because his heart condition cannot be proven to be from combat, they're not covering it. And he said all the guys, they're lucky to have $3 in their pocket. And he showed me in the corner of his little pup tent, he had neatly folded and he washed at the ocean and rinsed under that little shower the rest of his shower to get the sand off our body. He goes there and yes, he showers, but he scrubs down his clothes and then brings them back in a bag and then puts it over a hanger, clothesline, and that's actually good. Sun-dried gives you the best drying clothes. In any case, he had it all neatly folded, and then he had a little rack, and in the little rack were some cans of beans, and he was down to 2 cans of beans. And that's it. Nothing else. That's how tough these guys are living right now. And there were some women, and the women were in the middle of the encampment because the guys made sure that they were no longer harassed or attacked or raped, which they had been when they lived off the streets. And I spoke with them as well. In any case, when I saw how horrific they were, and I asked them, what do you think of Dick Cheney and George Bush and Bill O'Reilly and all these other people that say are brave men and women, they're all heroes? And I said, what do you think about that, that, you know, as long as you're doing their bidding, ideologically or for regime change or seeking other people's natural resources, when you come back here and there are no jobs, and they didn't help you overcome what you saw, experienced, or actually participated in a foreign land. And every one of them that I spoke to, hundreds over a 3-day period, said they were disgusted by everyone in the media. They were all liars, and they were cowards, especially Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld. And they're all cowards. They're just gutless cowards. How they could ever get elected to anything is beyond me. If we really paid attention, we wouldn't be electing any of these sociopaths. But that was their feeling, and they told me that. But they did go to a place called the Daily Bread, and I definitely hope that people support it. It's down near Titusville around Cape Canaveral, because it's one guy runs it all, and he does it out of his own pocket. The state, local, don't want anything to do with him. People down there in Florida don't want the homeless vets near them. And I was there interviewing the mayor, who had just caused one of their little tent cities to be completely destroyed. Now, when I went through that tent city, it was neat and orderly. People had tools, like one guy was a plumber, and he would go out each day and try to find work. And the moment you mention you're a homeless vet, nobody wants to hire you. In any case, they all had post-traumatic stress disorder. And so I said I would help them, and I've done the best I can, and I actually have built, and it's done. I'm just interviewing sergeant majors, guys who understand what it is to be in the military, and they're the people that, without sergeant majors, an awful lot of people in the services would get killed. So when I find the right one, then I'll hire them. But their whole living environment is done. I said I'd build it. I built it. It's done. Holistic, humanistic therapies. And they'll be there living in the next 3 months. In any case, one of the ways you help them is you get them close to nature. You work on their post-traumatic stress disorders. And there has to be a process of forgiving. They have to forgive themselves for what they've done. And a lot of these people did a lot of bad things. And they acknowledge it. But also some of them didn't do bad things, but witnessed in others who did, and they're all living with this. This is a study from the University of Western Ontario. So there has to be a process in all this therapy of forgiveness, learning our lessons, mourning our innocence, which frequently for a lot of people was lost there, the innocence of treasuring life and seeing the sentient qualities in animals and humans, meaning recognizing other people as being spiritual so you wouldn't hurt them rather than the enemy, in which you can. We are so sick in our society that we actually praise people who lose their sensitivity to the value of another person's life. And we do it not militarily in the maximum sense, we do it culturally. We keep saying it's about race. Today, race is way down the line. It is the culture, and there it's number one. I'll get into that on another program. Anyhow, University of Western Ontario said that the fear of predators causes post-traumatic stress disorder like changes in the brains of wild animals. Well, it does very similar to human beings. When you've been in an operational theater where your next step might be on a landmine, where the person walking by you might detonate a suicide bomb, you're on 24 24/7 full alert, and it burns you out. It destroys your cortisol. And that's one of the things that we've seen both in humans and animals. You have to have an environment where they're given unconditional love, where they can understand that there's nothing there to fear. And the same way with animals. It might take 1 to 2 years of daily loving an animal that's been abused before they regain trust. Sometimes it's sooner, and it's also true with human beings. And we don't have any programs right now dealing with animals. Individuals do, and some of the sanctuaries do, but as a society, we're not teaching the sacredness of life in our schools, and we should be, it's my opinion. Anyhow, I'll keep you up to date on how well we do with these vets. My goal is within 6 months, and they're living free. I'm paying for it all. But at the end of 6 months, the goal is to have them healthy mentally, physically, and spiritually so they can go back to their families without being damaged, go back into society and work, and become parts of communities again. And I'm going to let everyone know how that works. So hopefully then if it works, then we have a model of what works. We have protocols of what works. And then others can do it. From King Abdullah University of Science and Technology comes a study about herbal medicine showing great potential to treat cancer. Researchers from COST have been searching locally for plants that have potential for use to combat cancer. Now there are 3 plants used for traditional medicine in Saudi Arabia are shown to be worthy of further investigation for anti-cancer properties. And that's good. And one of them is the Phoenician juniper. And another one is known as Kaff Maryam, K-A-F-F-M-A-R-Y-A-M. And the last one is Jericho Rose. So, that's good. By the way, bitter cucumber is also good as well. So it's good that they're finding that there's cell-based phenotype profiling and imaging that is helping to match natural therapies, non-toxic therapies, with different tumors that they're able to slow down or reverse. From Brigham Young University, an article published with the American Psychological Association shows that social isolation and loneliness could be a greater threat to public health than obesity. And I just don't think we realize that nearly 43 million adults over 45 in the United States are suffering from chronic loneliness. Now, when you consider the percentage of Americans who are over 45 compared to the rest, there are approximately 84 million Americans who are up to age 18, they're about 60 up to the age of 18, but then you've got the millennials alone are about 84 million. So you're talking about a large segment of the American population are not being helped at all. And it's increasing. And in fact, I'm going to deal with that, the issues underlying cause of loneliness this Sunday when the loneliness workshop occurs. So how do we deal with loneliness? I'm going to do a special webinar just on loneliness. It'll be about 4 hours long. So for those who are interested, don't call now. I haven't set the date. But it's at an epidemic level. And people who are lonely are more depressed, tend to be malnourished. They're not thinking about their diet. They're not taking their supplements. They're not exercising. They're more susceptible to dying earlier. And I mean a big number of years comes off your life when you're chronically depressed or lonely. So we want people to live a longer life. So I'll be sharing some positive profiles of what you can do with protocols. Finally, from Florida State University, a good study shows the benefits of blueberries linked to lower blood pressure and less arterial stiffness. And this was published through the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition Dietetics. So you lower your risk of heart disease, and you lower your risk of diabetes, and you lower your risk of inflammation throughout the body. If you have about 22 grams of dried blueberries, 22 grams is, That's a reasonable amount, and that's equivalent to one cup of fresh blueberries. Because 28 grams is an ounce, so you're dealing with a small amount of actual fresh blueberries. So whether they're blueberry concentrate or blueberries or a blueberry powder, very good for you. It's terrific for you. And neuroscience shows how your gut bacteria impact your emotions from UCLA, meaning if you have good bacteria in your gut, it almost always translates to a better mental attitude. It's as if your second brain, which is in the gut, is communicating with your primary brain in your cranium, your skull, that things are good down here. Let's put some good emotions out up there. And it works in reverse of that, too. And by the way, barefoot is better. Modern-day shoes are unhealthy. University of Washington. So whenever you can, in the areas where you're not going to hurt yourself or hurt your feet, go barefooted. Especially around your home, always go barefooted. The body needs that splaying of the feet and the toes, and because so many shoes are just bad for us. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're 21 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from our break, I'm going to share the latest on our understanding what's going on in medicine, where it's getting so bad that it's now virtually inquisitional. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. This is entitled Skepticism and the New Scientific Inquisition. But I want to give a little preface. I am not opposed to medicine. To the contrary, I've had thousands of physicians on my program talking about the right way of dealing with medicine and the patient. It is my firm belief that the vast majority of medical doctors and nurses go into the profession for noble reasons. They are interested in saving lives wherever possible. So it is my opinion that American emergency medicine is the finest in the world, with the highest level of success if you have some traumatic event, if you've been in a car accident, if you've had a severed finger, if you have had a stroke or a heart attack, if you've had liver failure, if you need an organ transplant, if you had brain surgery and microsurgeries, if you've knocked out your teeth. All of the things that occur that are emergencies, we're exemplary. We're the best in the world. And that I respect and I honor that. Where I take issue is that part of medicine that is chronic care. Arthritis, diabetes, heart disease, cancers, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. And again, if it's left up to the physicians, we would have a completely different paradigm, but it's not, unfortunately. The corporate and political capture of medicine, and by extension the physicians, that has been underway now for decades, is reaching its peak. Writing back in 1976, Dr. Halstead Holman, the youngest professor to be chairman of the Stanford University's Department of Medicine, he was just 35, wrote, "The medical establishment is not primarily engaged in the disinterested pursuit of knowledge in the medical practice. Rather, in significant part, it is engaged in special interest advocacy, pursuing and preserving social power," end quote. Professor Holman called for a paradigm shift in medical laboratory research that would be innovative and support intellectual freedom and courage to tackle the many challenges and shortcomings clinical medical practice faced. The greatest obstacle Holman confronted within medicine's culture was what he called excellence deception. Excellence deception, which he defined as an ideological justification that rejects criticism and insulates itself from alternative medical theories and opinions. In effect, Professor Holman was calling out the hubris that pervaded the highest echelons of the medical establishment. Now, we are, like it or not, and have been, since our beginning, we are a hierarchical society. And whoever is at the pinnacle of that hierarchy has the greatest differentiation in the utilization of power. They are deferred to. For example, a student is never deferred to. The teacher is deferred to, but an associate professor is deferred to, an adjunct professor is deferred to, but not in the same way that a full professor or tenure professor, and they are not deferred to as much as a chairman of a department, and then the chancellor, etc. So everything comes from up high and works its way down. So careerists are frequently trying to have one more step up that ladder of success so they can be acknowledged. Acknowledgement in your field is very important. That said, then if you look, the rank and file within medicine are victims of the paradigm that they have been captured by. Corruption is a high-stakes game played by the pharmaceutical complex, without which we might actually have a healthcare system that works and makes sincere efforts to provide the public's health, whether it be concealing or fudging prior knowledge about drugs' adverse effects to maximize revenues, publishing junk clinical trials, buying off legislators, or engaging in devious retaliatory efforts to pressure and silence critics. These are only the costs of doing business to keep the corporations and Wall Street's bank accounts overflowing. Worse, our medical establishment, which the co-founder of the Cochrane Database Collaboration, Professor Peter Goetze, likened to the mafia, organized crime. Now, mind you, he was one of the insiders. He was one of the most respected and cited scientists in Europe and around the world. And yet he said in a personal conversation with me that he could no longer stay silent when he saw so many good physicians and good scientists being compromised by the establishment, meaning if you don't go along with them, they don't have any tolerance for you. And unfortunately, right now, our full government and all the health agencies have been captured by Big Pharma. And the consequences, which are instituting a corporate-sanctioned science-based inquisition. If anyone doubts that the Inquisition was only a dark anomaly in Western history when the church and superstitions reigned, and that our enlightened civilization would never fall back into such tyranny or repeat the horrors of witch hunts and funless trials, you have not been paying attention. Wasn't it Monty Python who got it right when he said the Inquisition's chief weapon is surprise and fear? Fear and surprise, and ruthless efficiency. For many years, Professor Noam Chomsky has been pointing out the subtle censorship that emerges when propaganda is united with a control over the media. And today, the media is not distinguishable from Silicon Valley and those that rule over content on the internet, including Google and Facebook and Wikipedia. The architecture of a secular and naturalist inquisition has been growing steadily for almost two decades. It is Tuomas Takko, a professor of theoretical philosophy at the University of Helsinki, who warns that the current rise in a, quote, scientific inquisition is an effort to convert us all to naturalism, meaning scientific skepticism, and to denounce the false gods of intuition and priori reasoning and thought experiments. A friend of mine recently said, but Gary, I'm a skeptic, and I feel comfortable and safe when I'm seeing that something is being criticized properly. And as I said to him, I agree with you. I want people to develop critical minds where they just don't accept something at face value, but they do their homework. And if the average person did all their homework on vaccines, then ask how many of them would actually vaccinate when they knew the truth. How many people would eat GMO food versus organic food if they knew the truth? Monsanto hid 10,000 pages of scientific evidence showing over a dozen different types of cancers were occurring in their animals and laboratory experiments. They hid that from the public. That's a crime against humanity, because the majority of the people don't eat organic. The majority of the population eats GMO foods, corn, soy, wheat, etc. So be critical, yes, but be open-minded also. At a lecture I did this past year, I raised an issue when someone says, well, how do you know what to believe? Who do you know that is honest? And I said, take a look at consensus thinking and then look in its opposite direction to see where the truth is, because I've never seen it in consensus. It's always that independent scientist that stands up and moves forward in a new direction. So if all the oncologists are using chemotherapy and don't question it, and they don't have double-blind placebo-controlled studies, they're using one chemotherapy against another in their clinical trials, then that's not real science. That's proprietary science. And it's going along to be accepted. So be skeptical, yes, but don't become a perpetual professional skeptic where you only believe in your knowledge and no other knowledge. So if someone else says, you know, we prayed and something good happened, or we had intuition and we made a different choice and it turned out right, they're going to think that you are wrong. You must be able at some point in your life to surrender knowledge, because knowledge can be artificially manufactured. It can be laced with propaganda. Wisdom is different. Knowledge can frequently undo us. So when you give up old knowledge for something you have evolved into a new way of thinking, you're growing. But you see, the medical inquisition's greatest threat is intellectual freedom. All the time I have professors from Columbia University and New York University and other universities say, I was listening to the program, and then they go on and tell me what they were thinking. And I'm thinking, well, why aren't you leading a new way of thinking, overcoming and overturning the Aristotelian view of motion? All right? Where are you challenging the status quo? The heavier objects fall faster than lighter objects, right? That was first a thought experiment. So were the first efforts of Einstein and Podolsky and Rosen to understand what they called the spooky action at a distance in quantum entanglement. For the hardcore followers of modern skepticism, particularly those in the biological and living sciences, even Einstein's choice of words would be earning him ridicule today. He'd be called a quack today and a deranged promoter of pseudoscience and woo. But we know otherwise. Nevertheless, we would have to wait another 29 years for John Bell to conduct real experiments to prove Einstein's spooky action was right. Since then, it has become a standard postulate in quantum theory, since skepticism holds to an extremely limited, very narrow, very radicalized, and rather modern reductionistic science perspective. Hence, no investigations or research is warranted, nor should we be funding that reach outside the conventional box. So if a skeptic says, I don't see the reason we should do the research on vitamin C helping with cancer, because we're sure it doesn't work, then there's no one funding it. It stops there. So someone's personal limitations, personal intellectual limitations, and theoretical limitations stops anyone else who might have a positive idea. And that then is where people say, well, we'll go along with that. And that's dangerous. Because skepticism today, the small group of people practicing it, well, we have to ask a question. If they're willing to discard much of human experience, like your intuition and creative flights of the imagination as subjective nonsense, where is there any room for thought experiments? In modern reductionist science, it doesn't exist. Hence, no investigations or research is warranted, nor should it be funded to reach outside anyone else's orthodoxy. To even consider the biomolecular health and disease may be understood from certain principles of quantum theory is anathema. Yet for quantum physicist Professor Mark Henry at the University of Strasbourg, understanding the particle signal quanta of cellular biology is exactly what medicine needs to start learning. In the 15th century, the Dominican friar Thomas de Torquemada established the Holy Office of the Inquisition and became its Grand Master. Today, the Grand Inquisitor is a loose consortium of power brokers running the CDC, the FDA, Health and Human Services, and the CEOs of GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, Pfizer, and big pharma firms, Wall Street giants and billionaires like Bill Gates and the Koch brothers, and George Soros, who bankroll the censorship of medical evidence that threatens conventional health care and its advocates, or shows that what they've been supporting is wrong. Our politicians, through the lobbying efforts of pharmaceutical henchmen and radical skeptics, now put pressure on internet firms to block and censor or blacklist dissident voices calling for public debate on health issues that directly impact all Americans. Yet an inquisition cannot succeed in its strategies of terror without an army of fanatical fearmongers who take control of the public's channels of communication by stealth and surprise. There are several identifiable entities that now serve as the subordinate accomplices to embed our new inquisition into national policy, to codify it. I'll give you one example. Our research, and we've published it, shows that there have only been 2 deaths from the measles in 19 years, but over 400 deaths from the measles vaccine. We have shown that measles is not a disease, it's an infection, just like chickenpox, the mumps. And 99.99% of people have it, and now they're immune for life. But that doesn't settle with their extreme view of the body and control over it. So now the people wanting to control your body, take away your freedom of choice about your body, Silicon Valley. Notably, Google, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Microsoft, Wikipedia. Science-based medicine is a problem today, because it's not based upon real science. And real science cannot be orthodox, because once science becomes orthodox, it ceases to be science. It is saying there is no further knowledge needed. There are no other truths to be explored or explained or codified. This is all there is to know about something. Well, now, look at where we've been in our history, and we're constantly breaking down old paradigms and instituting new ones. You also have the American Medical Association, other professional medical institutions, corporate mainstream media. So the Inquisition is only one command, play by our rules or be ostracized, persecuted, and ultimately have your reputation executed. Even brilliant scientists respected throughout the international community can find themselves on the Inquisition's racks if they deviate from the norm. One of the more tragic examples of a brilliant genius scientist who has been victimized by today's scientific inquisition is Nobel laureate Dr. Luc Montagnier, who discovered the HIV virus. The exiling of unfortunately, without question, Montagnier, and now his condemnation can be read throughout the websites and literature of skeptics and science-based medicine and Wikipedia, was due to his entering the forbidden zone of research that can validate quantum properties that may be explaining homeopathy's efficacy. He literally showed how homeopathy works. This concerns what is known as DNA transportation, a field of exploration first conducted by a French immunologist, Jacques Benevencile, in the 1980s. And he experimented with extremely high dilutions of an antigen IgE antibody to induce a degranulation of human basophils, a type of white blood cell associated with inflammatory conditions. His research showed positive results, and his research was scheduled to be published in Nature magazine. Yet, to see how the Inquisition operates, external pressure from skeptic factions in the medical community demanded an investigation into his lab. Nature sent a team to investigate, or more accurately, to interrogate the scientist. What is notable is that the celebrity skeptic and the darling among the science-based medicine and Wikipedia editorial crowd, James Randi, a stage magician without any scientific background whatsoever, was among those who challenged the scientist to replicate his study. Wikipedia's entry about the scientist and the retelling of the Nature skeptical executioners is grossly misleading. The team, in fact, placed additional conditions on the study's protocol that altered the study altogether. The media quickly discredited him, who would have likely been nominated for a Nobel Prize, that he was a fraud and a crack. He died in 2004, a broken man. Now along comes Professor Luc Montagnier, and he picked up on Benveniste's work on DNA transportation, and more importantly, by taking his thought experiment that water memory could be digitized, transmitted, and reinserted into another sample of water, which would then contain the same active quantities as the first sample. Montagnier has repeated the experiment numerous times, now in multiple labs in multiple countries. Nevertheless, he has earned a scarlet letter rather than another Nobel Prize, which he properly deserves. What he attempted to prove is a revolution in medicine, and he proved it. Now there is a paradigm that should shift, but instead all you have is a dogmatic modern medicine that cannot allow such innovation. So he proved how the memory of a plant or anything used in homeopathy, the memory is held in the water, and when you take that little water or the tablet, the memory is released and it gets to the healing benefit. So is it reasonable to ask the question, how objective, how fair, how honest are some of these skeptics when they are not willing to enter into open and hopefully productive dialogue with those that they oppose? It's an odd psychological fact that a mental obsession can potentially produce its opposite. If an idol or dogma is revered intensely enough, it can eventually flip and confirm the antithesis. We witness this today in the paradox that riddles science skepticism. The cockiness of reason morphs into rigid blind faith. Every fundamentalist faith, whether it be religious belief, one faith versus all others, or economic potentates of thought such as capitalism versus Marxism or socialism, and a political persuasion, conservative versus liberal, or liberal versus progressive, or a dominant paradigm in any given science, generates a layer of unyielding cynicism and denial that becomes increasingly intolerant. Cult author and futurist Robert Anton Wilson called this phenomena a psychological schemata, a blind spot of vision in an otherwise unobstructed normal visual field. In conclusion, although skepticism with a small s is a very healthy attitude, to be skeptical until you're shown that your skepticism is no longer warranted, then you release your skepticism and embrace that new truth. They're not willing to release anything, but it requires a willingness to present questions that might put our skepticism into doubt. Yes, evidence does deserve to be evaluated critically, but also allow enough space for our skeptical biases to be proven wrong. The only escape from skepticism's trap is to be skeptical towards one's own cherished beliefs. Yet the rise in skepticism as coadjutors for the scientific inquisition is its self-deceptive illusion that its skepticism is a virtue. It is not. This is true of all dogmatic, militant, regressive religious beliefs in general that entertain hidden motives to persecute its perceived enemies. I'm Gary Nall, and that's our editorial. We have 100 more coming at you. But now let's go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by, and we thank him for his patience here. And I gave you a little bit of his background earlier on, and let's say if he's, I just want to make sure that Sander's on the line. Sander Hicks, nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. Great to be on your show.
Sander, we have been watching the U.S. increasingly moving towards fulfilling Israel and John Bolton's dream to invade Iran. By all accounts, such an invasion would be the worst catastrophe with untold casualties since perhaps the Vietnam War. Iran is not Iraq nor Afghanistan. It is much larger geographically, has more advanced military, has 81 million people. Clearly, Iran doesn't want war. And over the years, it has been trying to make efforts at peace building with those who are sympathetic to this tense geopolitical situation. And one of them is the New Horizon Conference that you have attended in Iran, as well as many former U.S. intelligence officials and international diplomats and notable journalists and peace activists and even progressive Jewish rabbis among them. So in those who have attended the New Horizon Conferences, and another one is scheduled for this coming September, the FBI is on the prowl to interrogate participants who are American citizens. And I understand you have also been targeted by the FBI, and they showed up at your doorstep. So explain what happened with the FBI and explain what they're trying to get from you.
Sure, Gary. So, yeah, it's an important issue. The OFAC, the Office of Foreign Asset Control, inside the U.S. Treasury, took an extraordinary step in February, and they issued a sanction against the New Horizon Conference and its founders and administrators. So a sanction is usually against a business entity, you know, or a part of a government to restrict trade or business. So the U.S. Treasury has really kind of gone over the top now and is using the sanction process to censor an intellectual body over its political expression. So this is, I think, anti-American and goes up against the First Amendment. Iran, as you said, is very politically opposed to U.S. imperialism, to this weird blend of atheism and Zionism and Saudi Wahhabism that our foreign policy seems to embrace. Our foreign policy is really scripted by Wall Street and the military-industrial complex, and Iran is opposed to those things. So,
from your conversation, go ahead, please continue.
Well, thank you. I just want to say it's not just me. The FBI has also visited with colleagues of mine in Virginia and Florida, Scott Ricard, former NSA, Michael Maloof, former DOD, and Michael Springman, former State Department. And these are people that are much more credentialed than I am. I'm just a peace activist and independent publisher and carpenter in New York City. But we've all opposed the wars of aggression that have come to be the hallmark of U.S. foreign policy.
Okay, from your conversations with Iranian intellectuals and journalists, remember there's a big freedom movement in Iran. Not everyone there believes in the Ayatollah's philosophy of life. And also you had Israeli dissidents. Nobody even know from the New York Times and other publications that there's a strong movement in Israel. It's not large, but it's strong, where they want to see peace between Israel and Palestine. They don't want terror. They don't want war. They don't want Israelis nor Palestinians hurt. And yet, when they attend a conference like this, there's an enormous amount of negative media feedback or no media at all, as if this conference didn't happen, because this is not in alignment with the neoliberal agenda. And by the way, it's Trump and Bolton's right now saber waving, but it was George Bush before that and Barack Obama before that and Bill Clinton before that. We have a long history of not aligning with how to actually go about having peace with a country. Your thoughts?
Yes, you're right, Gary. And in 2007, a lot of people don't know, but we came very close. Dick Cheney had a plan that was almost implemented to attack Iran way back in 2007. We have a bad history of overthrowing democracy in Iran. 1953, we overthrew the democratically elected premier, Mohammad Mossadegh. So that's why the religious students that started a very radical but religious revolution in 1979, that's why they seized the CIA, and they felt it was a den of espionage. I visited it in Tehran. It's kind of a museum now, an anti-imperialist museum. They call the former U.S. embassy the den of espionage because that's where there was a lot of spying on behalf of the Shah, who was overthrown in 1979. But I think the most important thing to emphasize is that you're right. There have been some overtures to reach out to more Israelis. Miko Pelid is a Israeli-born son of a major Israeli general, and he was invited to Mashhad last year to the New Horizon Conference, and it was really great to meet him. And Rabbi David Weiss, who is a anti-Zionist Jewish rabbi, and what an amazing photograph that was to have Iranian intellectuals up there on the podium, sitting at a table with Russian philosophers like Alexander Dugin and Rabbi David Weiss. You know, it was a powerful statement of international understanding, you know, that this is not just Muslims versus Jews or Muslims versus Americans. This is this conference is a way to peace, international dialogue, understanding, information that is being controlled in our corporate media system. That needs to get out there. You know, that there's an unresolved issue with justice for Palestine. You know, if somebody made a joke recently, if I mention the word Palestine in the corporate media, I'm instantly called anti-Semitic. You know, that's how highly charged it is. Even progressives in Congress recently passed this legislation to censure BDS. The BDS movement is powerful in this country. I'm a member of the DSA. Last year at our convention, we voted to endorse BDS, boycott, divest, sanction. You know, there's got to be a way to shake this country out of its stupor in the same way that you are doing important work around health and big pharma and the control of information around that. There's got to be a way to shake us to our roots and really get excited and passionate about peacemaking and not fall for the same old propaganda. Demonization and anti-Iran, anti-Islamic propaganda.
We saw back during the Obama administration the passage of the National Defense Authorization Act, which would charge journalists and reporters with supporting terrorism by actually interviewing so-called enemies of the state and reporting about it. Chris Hedges, Daniel Ellsberg, Noam Chomsky, and others filed a lawsuit against Obama but lost in court. Now the FBI is out interrogating and threatening those who attended a plan to attend the New Horizon event. Do you see this as an extension of what earlier started by Obama and the great police state?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm also trying to practice the principles of Gandhi. So I'm not, when the FBI comes to my front door, I'm not going to slam the door because I think that's not consistent with just who I am. You know, I was in the middle of changing my baby's diaper, and my partner opened the door and said, you know, we thought they were Jehovah's Witnesses or something. So she was like, no, not now. and they said, we can wait. So I finished what I was doing and then went outside, and I spent about 28 minutes speaking with them. And I really tried to understand how they could be justifying what they're doing. Because you're right, it is an act of censorship to intimidate activists, and I have worked as a reporter. I've reported for Huffington Post and Alternet, so I could be considered something of a bona fide journalist. And so I spent the time talking to them because I wanted to find out, you know, how, if you've taken an oath to defend the Constitution, you could be rationalizing these anti-constitutional actions. Well, it turns out it's sort of twisted reasoning, but they think that the New Horizon Conference is acting as a kind of staging ground for Iranian intelligence to recruit people like myself to work for Iranian intelligence. And this is ridiculous because in our own firsthand experience, it's just never happened. Nobody has ever made us any offers. And this is consistent with what Michael Springman and Michael Maloof and other attendees have said. Nobody's recruited us, and we wouldn't do it. We're not there to work for the Iranians. We're there to actually help the United States. We're there to help the interests of the international people of the earth and the United States as an international country to not, you know, get into the folly of murdering another million people in the Middle East. You know, let's face it. Iraq was a genocide. Iraq, people like Congresswoman Maloney, who voted for the Iraq war, Hillary Clinton, these people are in part guilty of genocide. We've killed about a million people with the sanctions and the after effects and the actual hot war of the Iraq invasion. Libya has been turned into chaos. Syria has been and Yemen have been, you know, in the opening stages of a hot war. And there's got to be a major spiritual revolution in this country.
Well, I agree. And yet you don't see that. The only Tulsi Gabbard is the only one in Congress, along with Bernie Sanders, that understands what our foreign policy should be and seeks not to have war. And she's being attacked by the Democratic Party because she is pro-peace. Boy, does that tell us a lot. We're out of time. Sander Hicks, thank you very much. And Sander's website is newyorkmegaphone.com. Continue up your good work, even if the FBI is intimidating you. I'm Gary Nong. We're out of time. Just a quick mention that on Sunday, we're allowing 7 people in the New York area who have either diabetes or arthritis to join our support group, because we had a group of people who told us after the group that they just came because they were interested to come to one meeting. This is a 4-week clinical study to see how lifestyle and behavior modification can impact illnesses without a medical model, a different model. You want to join us, just call 646-926-5459, 646-926-5459. We have 3 places open in the depression, loneliness, and anxiety workshop that follows that one. Have a nice day, everyone. See you on our next program.
When I became of age, my mother called me to her side. She said, son, you're growing up now. Pretty soon you'll take a bride. And then she said, just because you become a young man.